Chapter 15, verse 1. After these words, the word of Yahuwah came unto Abram in a vision, saying, Fear not, Abram, I am a shield to thee, thy exceeding great reward. 2. And Abram said, Lord Yahweh, what wilt thou give me, and I am walking childless? And the son, the procurator of my house, this Damascene Eliezer. 3. And Abram said, Lo, to me thou hast not given seed, and behold, a son of my house is mine heir. 4. And behold, the word of Yahuwah came unto him, saying, This one shall not be thine heir, but he that shall go forth out of thy viscera shall be thine heir. 5. And he led him forth abroad, and said, Look, I beseech, toward heaven, and number the stars, if thou be able to number them. And he said unto him, So shall thy seed be. 6. And he believed in Yahuwah, and he imputed it to him for justice. 7. And he said unto him, I am Yahuwah, who led thee forth out of Ur of the Chaldees, to give thee this land to inherit it. 8. And he said, Lord Yahweh, whereby shall I know that I shall inherit it? 9. And he said unto him, Take thee a heifer of 3 years, and a she-goat of 3 years, and a ram of 3 years, and a turtle dove, and a young pigeon. 10. And he took unto him all these, and divided them in the midst, and laid each part over against the other. And the birds he did not divide. 11. And the birds of prey came down upon the bodies, and Abram drove them away. 12. And it came to pass when the sun was going down, that a deep sleep fell upon Abram, and behold, a terror of great shades falling upon him. 13. And he said unto Abram, Knowing thou shalt know that thy seed shall be a stranger in a land that is not theirs, and shall serve them, and they shall afflict them 400 years. 14. And also that nation whom they shall serve will I judge, and after that shall they go out with great acquisition. 15. And thou shalt come to thy fathers in peace. Thou shalt be buried in a good old age. 16. And in the fourth generation they shall return hither, for the iniquity of the Amorites is not yet consummated. 17. And it came to pass that the sun went down, and there was thick darkness. And behold, a furnace of smoke, and a torch of fire that passed between those pieces. 18. In that day Yahuwah made a covenant with Abram, saying, Unto thy seed will I give this land, from the river of Egypt unto the great river, the river Phrath. 19. The Kenite, and the Kenizzite, and the Cadmonite. 20. And the Hittite, and the Perizzite, and the Rephaim. 21. And the Amorite, and the Canaanite, and the Girgashite, and the Jebusite. The Contents. 1778. Here in the internal sense are continued the things concerning the Lord, after he had endured in childhood the most severe combats of temptations, which were directed against the love which he cherished towards the whole human race, and in particular towards the church. And therefore, being anxious concerning their future state, a promise was made him. But it was shown at the same time what the state of the church would become towards its end, when it would begin to expire, but that still a new church should revive, which would take the place of the former, and the celestial kingdom would be immensely increased. 1779. The Lord's consolation after the combats of temptations described in the foregoing chapter. Verse 1. 1780. The Lord's complaint respecting the church, that it was in externals only. Verses 2 and 3. A promise concerning an internal church. Verse 4. Concerning its multiplication. Verse 5. That the Lord is justice. Verse 6. And unto him alone belongs the kingdom in the heavens and on earth. Verse 7. 1781. And as he desired to be assured that the human race would be saved, verse 8, it was shown him how the case is with the church, in general, specifically, and in particular. Verses 9 to 17. 1782. The heifer, she-goat, and ram are the representatives of the celestial things of the church. The turtle dove and the young pigeon are the representatives of its spiritual things. Verse 9. The church was on one side, and the Lord on the other. Verse 10. The Lord would dissipate evils and falsities. Verse 11. But the falsities would still infest it. Verses 12 and 13. From these there should be deliverance. Verse 14. Thus the Lord received consolation. Verse 15. But that evils would take possession. Verse 16. And at last nothing but falsities and cupidities would reign. Verse 17. Then would come the Lord's kingdom and a new church, the extension of which is described. Verse 18. The falsities and evils to be expelled from it are the nations named. Verses 19 to 21. The internal sense. 1783. The things which are here contained are, as before said, true historical facts, namely, that Yahweh spoke thus with Abram, and that the land of Canaan was promised him as an inheritance, that he was commanded to take the heifer, the she-goat, ram, turtle-dove, and young pigeon, and place them as described, that the birds of prey came down upon the bodies, that a deep sleep fell upon him, and in the sleep a terror of shades, and that when the sun had set, there was seen by him, as it were, a furnace of smoke, with a torch of fire between the parts, besides the other historical facts. These are true historical facts, but still each and all of them, even to the least of what was done, are representative. And the words themselves, by which they are described, are, as to the smallest detail, significative. That is to say, in each and all of these things there is an internal sense. For each and all the things contained in the word are inspired, and, being inspired, they cannot but be from a celestial origin. That is, they must necessarily store up within them celestial and spiritual things, for otherwise it could not possibly be the word of the Lord. These are the things contained in the internal sense, and when this sense lies open, the sense of the letter is obliterated, as if there were none. And on the other hand, when attention is given solely to the historical sense or that of the letter, the internal sense is obliterated as if there were none. These two are related as is celestial light to the light of the world, and conversely, as is the light of the world to celestial light. When celestial light appears, then the light of the world is as thick darkness, as has been made known to me by experience. But when anyone is in the light of the world, then celestial light, if it appeared, would be as thick darkness. It is the same with human minds. To him who places everything in human wisdom or in scientifics, celestial wisdom appears as an obscure nothing. But to him who is in celestial wisdom, human wisdom is as something very general and obscure, which, if there were not celestial rays in it, would be as thick darkness. Verse 1. After these words, the word of Yahuwah came unto Abram in a vision, saying, Fear not, Abram, I am a shield to thee, thy exceeding great reward. After these words, the word of Yahuwah came unto Abram in a vision, signifies that after the combats in childhood, there was a revelation. A vision denotes inmost revelation, which is that of perception. Fear not, Abram, I am a shield to thee. Signifies protection against evils and falsities, which is to be trusted. Thy great reward signifies the end or purpose of the victories. 1785. After these words, the word of Yahuwah came to Abram in a vision. That this signifies that after the combats in childhood there was a revelation is evident from the signification of words, also of the word of Yahuwah to Abram, and also from the signification of a vision. By words in the Hebrew language are signified actual things. Here the things accomplished, which are the Lord's combats of temptations, treated of in the preceding chapter. The word of Yahuwah to Abram is nothing else but the Lord's word with himself. But in childhood and in the combats of temptations, when the essences were not yet united as one, it could not appear otherwise than as a revelation. What is internal when it acts into what is external, in a state and at moments when this is more remote, is presented in no other manner. This is the state which is called the Lord's state of humiliation. 1786. That a vision denotes inmost revelation, which is that of perception, may be seen from the nature of visions, which take place in accordance with the man's state. To those whose interiors are closed, a vision is very different from what it is to those whose interiors are open. For example, when the Lord appeared to the whole congregation in Mount Sinai, the appearing was a vision that was different to the people from what it was to Aaron, and that was different to Aaron from what it was to Moses. And again, visions were different to the prophets from what they were to Moses. There are many kinds of visions, concerning which of the Lord's divine mercy more will be said hereafter. The more interior the visions, the more perfect they are. With the Lord, they were the most perfect of all, because he then had perception of all things in the world of spirits and in the heavens, and also had immediate communication with Yahuwah. This communication is represented, and in the internal sense is signified, by the vision in which Yahuwah appeared to Abram. 1787. Fear not, Abram, I am a shield to thee. That this signifies protection against evils and falsities, which is to be trusted in, is evident from the signification of a shield, to be explained presently. These words, namely, that Yahuwah is a shield, and that he is an exceeding great reward, are words of consolation after temptations. Every temptation is attended with some kind of despair, otherwise it is not a temptation, and therefore consolation follows. He who is tempted is brought into anxieties, which induce a state of despair as to what the end is to be. The very combat of temptation is nothing else. He who is sure of victory is not in a state of anxiety, and therefore is not in temptation. The Lord also, as he endured the most dire and cruel temptations of all, could not but be driven into states of despair, and these he dispelled and overcame by his own power, as may be clearly seen from his temptation in Gethsemane, thus recorded in Luke. When Jesus was at the place, he said unto the disciples, Pray that ye enter not into temptation. But he was parted from them about a stone's cast, and kneeling down he prayed, saying, Father, if thou be willing, let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not my will, but thine be done. And there appeared unto him an angel from heaven, strengthening him. And being in an agony, he prayed more earnestly, and his sweat became as drops of blood falling down upon the ground. 22:40-45. In Matthew, he began to be sorrowful and sore troubled. Then saith he unto the disciples, My whole soul is sorrowful even unto death. And going forward a little, he fell on his face, praying, and saying, My Father, if it be possible, let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not as I will, but as thou wilt. Again a second time he went away and prayed, saying, My Father, if this cup cannot pass except I drink it, Thy will be done. And he prayed a third time, saying the same word. 26:37-44. In Mark, he began to be terrified and sore troubled, and said to the disciples, My soul is encompassed with sorrow even unto death. He went forward a little, and fell on the ground, and prayed that, if it were possible, the hour might pass away from him. He said, Abba, Father, all things are possible unto thee. Remove this cup from me. Howbeit, not as I will, but as thou wilt. And he spake thus a second time, and a third. 14:33-41. From these passages we may see what was the nature of the Lord's temptations, that they were the most terrible of all, and that he felt anguish from the very inmost, even to the sweating of blood, and that he was then in a state of despair concerning the end and the event, and also that he had consolations. The words now under consideration, I, Yahuwah, am thy shield, and thy exceeding great reward, involve in like manner consolation after the combats of temptations treated of in the foregoing chapter. 1788. That a shield means protection against evils and falsities, which is trusted in, is evident without explanation. For from common usage, the expression has become familiar that Yahuwah is a shield and a buckler. But what is specifically signified by a shield may be seen from the word, in that as regards the Lord, it signifies protection, and as regards man, trust in the Lord's protection. As war signifies temptations, as before shown, Numbers 16:64, so all the weapons of war signify some specific thing belonging to temptation and to defense against evils and falsities, that is, against the diabolical crew that induce the temptation and that tempt. Therefore, a shield signifies one thing, a buckler signifies another, and a target another, a helmet another, a spear and a lance another, a sword another, a bow and arrows another, a coat of mail another. Concerning each of which, of the Lord's divine mercy, more will be said hereafter. The reason why a shield, in relation to the Lord, signifies protection against evils and falsities, and in relation to man, trust in the Lord, is that it was a protection to the breast, and by breast, good and truth are signified. Good, because the heart is there, and truth, because the lungs are there. That this is the signification of a shield is evident in David. Blessed be Yahuwah my rock, who teacheth my hands combat, my fingers war, my mercy and my fortress, my fortified citadel and my deliverer, my shield and he in whom I trust. Psalm 144, verses 1 and 2. Here the combat and war are those of temptations, and in the internal sense, the Lord's temptations. The shield, with reference to Yahuwah, is protection, and with reference to man is trust, as is plainly evident. In the same. O Israel, trust thou in Yahuwah. He is their help and their shield. O house of Aaron, trust ye in Yahuwah. He is their help and their shield. Ye that fear Yahuwah, trust in Yahuwah. He is their help and their shield. Psalm 115, verses 9 to 11. Where the meaning is similar. Again, Yahuwah is my fortress, my God in whom I trust. He shall cover thee with his wing, and under his wings shalt thou trust. His truth is a shield and a buckler. Psalm 91, verses 2 and 4. Where a shield and a buckler denote protection against falsities. Again, Yahuwah is my rock and my fortress and my deliverer, my God, my strong rock in whom I trust, my shield and the horn of my salvation. Yahuwah is a shield unto all that trust in him. Psalm 18, verses 2 and 30, where the meaning is similar. Again, thou that provest the hearts and reins, a just God, my shield is upon God who saveth the upright in heart. Psalm 7, verses 9 and 10. This means trust. Again, thou hast given me the shield of thy salvation, and thy right hand will hold me up. Psalm 18, verse 35. This also signifies trust. Again, the shields of the earth belong unto God. He is greatly exalted. Psalm 47, verse 9. Here trust is again meant. Again. Yahuwah God is a sun and a shield. Yahuwah will give grace and glory. Good shall not be withheld from them that walk in integrity. Psalm 84, verse 11. This signifies protection. In Moses, Thy blessings, O Israel, who is like unto thee, a people saved in Yahuwah, the shield of thy help, and who is the sword of thy excellency? And thine enemies shall be mistaken in regard to thee. Deuteronomy 33, verse 29. The shield denotes protection. As weapons of war are spoken of with reference to those who are in the combats of temptations, so also the same weapons of war are attributed to the enemies who assail and tempt. And then they signify contrary things. Thus a shield signifies the evils and falsities from which they fight, and which they defend, and in which they trust. As in Jeremiah, Make ye ready the shield and buckler, and draw near to battle. Harness the horses and go up, ye horsemen, and stand forth in helmets, Furbish the lances, put on the coats of mail. Jeremiah 46, verses 3 and 4. Besides many other passages. 1789. Thy great reward. That this signifies the end and purpose of the victories is evident from the signification of reward as being the prize after the combats of temptations. Here the end and purpose of the victories, because the Lord never looked for any prize of victory for himself. His prize of victories was the salvation of the whole human race, and it was from love toward the entire human race that he fought. He who fights from this love demands for himself no prize, because this love is such that it wills to give and transfer all its own to others, and to have nothing for itself. So that it is the salvation of the whole human race that is here signified by the reward. 1790, verse 2. And Abram said, Lord Yehoweh, what wilt thou give me? And I am walking childless, and the procurator of my house, this Damascene Eliezer. Abram said, Lord Yehoweh, signifies the Lord's perception. Abram is the interior man. The Lord Yehoweh is the internal man relatively to the interior. What wilt thou give me, and I am walking childless? Signifies that there was no internal church. And the procurator of my house signifies an external church. This Damascene Eliezer denotes the external church. 1791. Abram said, Lord Yehoweh. That this signifies the Lord's perception may be seen from the fact that the Lord had the most interior and perfect perception of all things. This perception, as before said, was a perceptive sensation and cognition of all things that were taking place in heaven, and was a continual communication and internal conversation with Yahuwah, which the Lord alone had. This is meant in the internal sense by the words, Abram said to Yahuwah. Thus was represented by Abram when he spoke with Yahuwah. And the like is signified in what follows, wherever the expression, Abram said to Yahuwah, occurs. 1792. That Abram denotes the interior man, or that Abram represented the Lord's interior or rational man, has been stated before. What the Lord's interior man is, was shown in the foregoing chapter. 1793. That the Lord Yahweh is the internal man relatively to the interior is evident from what has been said concerning the Lord's internal man, namely, that it was Yahuwah himself from whom he was conceived and whose only son he was, and to whom the Lord's human became united after he had by the combats of temptation purified the maternal human, that is, that which he derived from the mother. The appellation Lord Yahweh occurs very often in the word, indeed as often as Yahuwah is called Lord. He is not called Lord Yahuwah, but Lord Yahweh, and this especially where temptations are treated of. As in Isaiah, behold, the Lord Yahweh cometh in strength, and his arm shall rule for him. Behold, his reward is with him, and his work before him. He shall feed his flock like a shepherd, he shall gather the lambs in his arm, and carry them in his bosom, and shall lead those that give suck. 40 verses 10 and 11. Here, the Lord Yahweh cometh in strength, relates to his victory in the combats of temptations. His arm shall rule for him, means that it is from his own power. What the reward is that is mentioned in the first verse of this chapter is here declared, namely, that it is the salvation of the whole human race. That is to say, he feeds his flock like a shepherd, gathers the lambs in his arm, carries them in his bosom, and leads those that give suck, all of which things pertain to inmost or divine love. Again in the same prophet, the Lord Yahweh hath opened mine ear, and I was not rebellious. I have not turned away backward. I gave my body to the smiters, and my cheeks to them that plucked off the hair. I hid not my face from shame and spitting. And the Lord Yahweh will help me. Behold, the Lord Yahweh will help me. 50 verses 5 to 7 and 9. Here temptations are manifestly treated of, besides other passages. 1794. What wilt thou give me, and I am walking childless? That this signifies that there is no internal church may be seen from the signification of walking childless. To walk in the internal sense is to live, as before shown, number 519. But one who is childless is one who has no seed or no posterity of his own. This is treated of in the following verses, 3 to 5, where it is explained what is meant by one who is childless, or one who has no seed. 1795. And the procurator of my house. That this signifies an external church is evident from the signification of the procurator of a house in the internal sense, that is, in respect to the church. The external church is called the procurator of a house when the internal church itself is the house and the father of the family is the Lord. The external church is no otherwise, for all procuration belongs to the external of the church, as the administration of rituals and of many things that pertain to the temple and to the church itself, that is, to the house of Yahuwah or of the Lord. The externals of the church without the internals are of no account. They have their being from the internals, and are such as the internals are. The case herein is the same as it is with man. His external or corporeal is in itself a thing of no account unless there is an internal which gives it soul and life. Such, therefore, as is the internal, such is the external. Or such as disposition and mind are, such is the worth of all things which come forth by means of the external or corporeal. The things which are of the heart make the man, not those which are of the mouth and the gestures. And such is the case with the internals of the church. But still the externals of the church are like the externals of a man, in that they take charge of and administer. Or what is the same, the external or corporeal man may in like manner be called the procurator or administrator of the house, when the house means the interiors. From this it is evident what childless means, namely the state in which there is no internal of the church, but only an external, as was the case at the time of which the Lord complained. This Damascene Eliezer. From what has just been said, it is now evident that these words denote the external church, and the same appears from the signification of a Damascene. Damascus was the principal city of Syria, where there were remains of the worship of the ancient church, and whence came Eber, or the Hebrew nation, amongst whom there was nothing but the external of the church, as before said, number 1238, 1241. Thus nothing but the procuration of the house. That there is in these words something of despair, and, consequently, of the Lord's temptation, is evident from the words themselves, and also from the consolation that follows respecting the internal church. Verse 3. And Abram said, Lo, to me thou hast not given seed, and behold, a son of my house is mine heir. Abram said, Lo, to me thou hast not given seed, signifies that there was no internal of the church, which is love and faith. Behold, a son of my house is mine heir, signifies that there would be in the Lord's kingdom only what is external. Abram said, Lo, to me thou hast not given seed. That this signifies that there was no internal of the church is evident from the signification of seed, which is love and faith, spoken of above. Number 255, 256, 1025. And from the signification of an heir, as explained in what follows. That love and the faith derived from it are the internal of the church has already been several times said and shown. No other faith is meant as being the internal of the church than that which is of love or charity, that is, which is from love or charity. Faith, in a general sense, is all the doctrinal teaching of the church. But what is doctrinal, separated from love or charity, by no means makes the internal of the church. For the doctrinal is only science which pertains to the memory, and this exists also with the worst men, and even with infernals. But the doctrinal that is from charity, or that is of charity, does make the internal of the church, for this is of the life. The life itself is the internal of all worship, and so is all the doctrinal that flows from the life of charity, and it is this doctrinal that is of faith which is here meant. That it is this faith which is the internal of the church may be seen from this consideration alone, that he who has the life of charity is acquainted with all things of faith. Just examine, if you will, all doctrinal things, and see what and of what quality they are. Do they not all pertain to charity, and consequently to the faith that is from charity? Take only the precepts of the Decalogue. The first of these is to worship the Lord God. He who has the life of love or of charity worships the Lord God, because this is his life. Another precept is to keep the Sabbath. He who is in the life of love or in charity keeps the Sabbath holy, for nothing is more sweet to him than to worship the Lord and to glorify him every day. The precept, "Thou shalt not kill," is altogether of charity. He who loves his neighbor as himself shudders at doing anything that injures him, still more at killing him. So too the precept, "Thou shalt not steal." For he who has the life of charity would rather give of his own to his neighbor than take anything away from him. And so with the precept, "Thou shalt not commit adultery." He who is in the life of charity rather guards his neighbor's wife, lest anyone should offer her such injury, and regards adultery as a crime against conscience, and such as destroys conjugal love and its duties. To covet the things that are the neighbor's is also contrary to those who are in the life of charity. For it is of charity to desire good to others from one's self and one's own. Such, therefore, by no means covet the things which are another's. These are the precepts of the Decalogue, which are external doctrinal things of faith. And these are not only known in the memory by him who is in charity and its life, but are in his heart. And he has them inscribed upon himself, because they are in his charity, and thus in his very life, besides other things of a dogmatic nature which he in like manner knows from charity alone, for he lives according to a conscience of what is right. The right and the truth, which he cannot thus understand and explore, he believes simply, or from simplicity of heart, to be so, because the Lord has said so. And he who so believes does not do wrong, even though what he thus accepts is not true in itself, but apparent truth. As, for example, if anyone believes that the Lord is angry, punishes, tempts, and the like, or if he holds that the bread and wine in the Holy Supper are significative, or that the flesh and blood are somehow present in some way or manner which they explain, it is of no consequence whether they say the one thing or the other, although there are few who think about this matter, or even if they do think about it, provided this is done from a simple heart, because they have been so instructed, and nevertheless live in charity. These, when they hear that the bread and wine, in the internal sense, signify the Lord's love towards the whole human race, and the things which are of this love, and man's reciprocal love to the Lord and the neighbor, they forthwith believe and rejoice that it is so. Not so they who are in doctrinal things and not in charity. These contend about everything, and damn all whoever they may be that do not say they call it to believe as they do. From all this everyone can see that love to the Lord and charity towards the neighbor are the internal of the church. Behold, a son of my house is mine heir. That this signifies that there would be only what is external in the Lord's kingdom is evident from the signification in the internal sense of an heir and of inheriting. To become an heir or to inherit signifies eternal life in the Lord's kingdom. All who are in the Lord's kingdom are heirs, for they live from the Lord's life, which is the life of mutual love, and from this they are called sons. The Lord's sons or heirs are all those who are in his life, because their life is from him, and they are born of him, that is, are regenerate. Those who are born of anyone are heirs, and so are all who are being regenerated by the Lord, for in this case they receive his life. In the Lord's kingdom there are those who are external, those who are interior, and those who are internal. Good spirits who are in the first heaven are external. Angelic spirits who are in the second heaven are interior. And angels who are in the third are internal. Those who are external are not so closely related or so near to the Lord as those who are interior, nor are these so closely related or so near to the Lord as those who are internal. The Lord, from the divine love or mercy, wills to have all near to himself, so that they do not stand at the doors, that is, in the first heaven. But he wills that they should be in the third, and, if it were possible, not only with himself, but in himself. Such is the divine love, or the Lord's love. And as the church was then only in externals, he in these words complained, saying, Behold, a son of my house is mine heir. By which is signified that there would thus be only what is external in his kingdom. But consolation follows, and a promise concerning what is internal, in the verses that follow. What the external of the church is has been stated before. See number 1083, 1098, 1100, 1151, 1153. What pertains to the doctrinal does not itself make the external, still less the internal, as before said. Nor with the Lord doth it distinguish churches from one another. But that which does this is a life according to doctrinal beliefs, all of which, provided they are true, look to charity as their fundamental. What is the doctrinal but that which teaches how a man must be? In the Christian world, it is doctrinal matters that distinguish churches, and from them men call themselves Roman Catholics, Lutherans, and Calvinists, or the Reformed and the Evangelical, and by other names. It is from what is doctrinal alone that they are so called, which would never be the case if they would make love to the Lord and charity towards the neighbor the fundamentals of faith. Doctrinal matters would then be only varieties of opinion concerning the mysteries of faith, which truly Christian men would leave to everyone to hold in accordance with his conscience, and would say in their hearts that a man is truly a Christian when he lives as a Christian, that is, as the Lord teaches. Thus, from all the differing churches, there would be made one church, and all the dissensions that result from doctrine alone would vanish. Indeed, all hatred of one against another would be dissipated in a moment, and the Lord's kingdom would come upon the earth. The ancient church, just after the flood, although spread throughout many kingdoms, was yet of this character. That is, men differed much among themselves as to doctrinal matters, but still made charity the fundamental. And they looked upon worship not from doctrinal matters which pertain to faith, but from charity which pertains to life. This is meant where it is said, Genesis 11, verse 1, that they all had one lip, and their words were one, concerning whom, see above, number 1285. 1800, verse 4. And behold, the word of Yahuwah came unto him, saying, This one shall not be thine heir, but he that shall go forth out of thy viscera shall be thine heir. Behold, the word of Yahuwah came unto him, signifies an answer, saying, This one shall not be thine heir, signifies that what is external shall not be the heir of his kingdom. But he that shall go forth out of thy viscera, signifies those who are in love to him and in love towards the neighbor. He shall be thine heir, signifies that they shall be made heirs. 1801. Behold, the word of Yahuwah came unto him. That this signifies an answer, namely, that there should not be what is external of the church, but that there should be what is internal, is evident from what follows. The word of Yahuwah, or this answer, is the consolation. 1802. Saying, This one shall not be thine heir. That this signifies that what is external shall not be the heir of his kingdom is evident from the signification of becoming an heir or inheriting, explained just above. The heir of the Lord's kingdom is not what is external, but what is internal. What is external is so too, but through what is internal, for they then act as one. That it may be known how the case herein is, it is to be kept in mind that all those who are in the heavens, as well those who are in the first and in the second, as those who are in the third, that is, as well those who are external and those who are interior, as those who are internal, are heirs of the Lord's kingdom, for they all make one heaven. In the Lord's heavens, the internals and the externals are circumstanced exactly as they are in man. The angels in the first heaven are subordinate to those in the second, and these are subordinate to the angels in the third heaven. The subordination, however, is not that of command, but is, as in a man, the influx of things internal into things more external. That is, the Lord's life inflows through the third heaven into the second, and through this into the first, in the order of their succession. Besides, that it inflows immediately into all the heavens. The inferior or subordinate angels do not know that this is so, unless reflection is given them by the Lord. Thus, there is no subordination of command. In proportion to the existence of what is internal in an angel of the third heaven, he is an heir of the Lord's kingdom. And in proportion to the same, in an angel of the second heaven, is he an heir. And in like manner, in proportion to the existence of what is internal, in an angel of the first heaven, is he too an heir. It is that which is internal that causes anyone to be an heir. With the interior angels, there is more of what is internal than there is with the more external angels. And therefore, the former are nearer to the Lord, and are more fully heirs. That which is internal is love to the Lord and charity towards the neighbor. In proportion, therefore, to the love and the charity which they have, in the same proportion are they sons and heirs, for in the same proportion are they partakers of the Lord's life. But no one can possibly be taken up from the first or external heaven into the second or interior heaven, until he has been instructed in the goods of love and the truths of faith. So far as he has been instructed, so far he can be taken up, and can come among angelic spirits. It is the same with angelic spirits, before they can be taken up or come into the third heaven, or among angels. By instruction, the interiors are formed, and thereby the internals, and are adapted to receiving the goods of love and the truths of faith, and thereby the perception of what is good and true. No one can perceive what he does not know and believe. Consequently, he cannot be gifted with the faculty of perceiving the good of love and the truth of faith, except by means of cognitions, so as to know what they are and of what nature. It is so with all, even with infants, who are all instructed in the Lord's kingdom. But these are easily instructed, because they are imbued with no principles of falsity. They are, however, instructed in general truths only. And when they receive these, they perceive things without number or limit. The case in this respect is the same as it is with one who has been persuaded respecting any truth in general. The particulars of the general truths and the singulars of the particulars, which are confirmatory, he easily learns, as it were, of himself or spontaneously, for he is affected by the truth in general, and thence also by the particulars and singulars of the same truth, which confirm. For these enter into the general affection with delight and pleasantness, and thus constantly perfect it. These are the internal things on account of which they are called heirs, or by means of which they can inherit the Lord's kingdom. But they first begin to be heirs or to have a heritage when they are in the affection of good, that is, in mutual love, into which they are introduced by the cognitions of good and truth, and by the affections of them. And in proportion as they are in the affection of good or in mutual love, in the same proportion are they heirs or have an inheritance. For mutual love is the veriest life which they receive from the Lord's essence as from their Father. These things may be seen from what follows in the next verse.